Hello, hello, hello. I am your B. Smith, hostess with the mostest, Michael Munoz. And welcome to In Yo Mouth!
In Yo Mouth.
I'm the queen of food who's always in the mood.
To lick it right, lick it good, show you how to...
Oh, God, that's good.
I want to know what you eat from the streets to the sheets. So open wide, honey.
I'm coming.
In Yo
Mouth. I got the goosebumps.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hey there, and welcome back, folks. Once again, I'm your hostess with the mostest, Munoz. And how are y'all doing? Can you believe it's September 1st already? I mean, where did the time go, y'all? Summer is winding down, but people are still acting a fool. I just saw a police car chase up 9th Avenue in the wrong direction. People are doing the most these days. People have been stuck inside for too long, is my assessment of that. And I hope they caught that man and everyone is safe in that respect. Oh my God, it is part two of my interview with Michael Twitty. Welcome. I hope you're as excited as I am. But before we get to the getting on, as always, in the grand tradition of In Yo Mouth, I need to wish y'all out there happy National Gyro Day or Gyro Day. Oh my God. There is nothing like a good gyro. I mean, growing up in Bay Ridge, there's a place called Placa Taverna on the corner of 86th Street and 4th Avenue. It's been there for a million years. They have the most delicious gyros ever. If you're ever in Brooklyn, please go visit them because it is no joke, y'all. Just like the lamb meat is like juicy and moist. I know people out there hate the word moist, but it's so juicy and moist. And sometimes I have them put like a little hummus on the pita before they throw all this stuff in. Oh, I'm starving, Jesus. Well, no matter what you celebrate out there, I know I'm here for National Gyro Day, and I hope you are too. And if you're a vegetarian, you know what? A vegetable gyro with some like hummus and maybe a little feta, that kind of sounds delish, you know? I'm sure somebody out there makes a good vegan, vegetarian version, you know, like Impossible Lamb Meat or something. I'm here for it. Go out and celebrate with, and you know what? Send me your pictures of your gyros. Why not? And moving right along to this day in gay history, did you all know out there that 1979, New Jersey decriminalizes private consensual homosexual acts? Oh my God, 1979 to 89, 99, 2009. That's like 40 years ago, 41 years ago. I mean, that's as old, almost as old as I am. I mean, you know, that's crazy. That is crazy that we weren't allowed to get it on in the state of New Jersey. Oh my God, folks. Oh my God. The world is crazy. The world, you know what? I don't even want to get into it because I'm going to fall down a hole of like, why are people nuts? Why is the world a mess? And I don't really feel like doing that today because this conversation with Michael Twitty was so special. And I hope you're as excited as I am for part two. We left off in the last episode talking about what Michael envisions gay food being, how Michael defines what gay food is. And I want to pick it up right there because the last of this conversation, y'all, I don't think you're ready for. And so without further ado, please help me welcome back the one, the only, Michael Twitty. I really wanted to ask you, because we're on the subject of like queer food, gay food, queerness in food. You know, through your travels and through your like, you know, explorations and, you know, archaeological food quests, if I may call them that, do you find or have you found traces of us or remnants of the queer ancestors? Or does that come up through your food tracing and what you do? Like, has that like popped out at you anywhere?
Absolutely. There are, you know, and the thing about it that makes this very difficult is that I would have to spend 20, 30 years just digging out one of those areas, because as you know, like when you're intersectional, when you have a busy intersection of identities, it's really hard to like parse out a narrative that's like linear, that's unbroken for people that are marginalized, right? Especially us, you know. But, you know, seeing ads, runaway ads from the South that talk about my so-and-so, such and such, is probably wearing a dress and affects the manners of a woman, is an excellent cook and an incredible seamstress. And there's not one of these. There's a good handful of these. This wasn't a singular occurrence. If you can imagine, like I tell people, oh yeah, there were lesbian couples that ran away from slavery together and made it to North and became abolitionists. I mean, can you imagine that damn movie?
Yeah.
You know, there are non-binary young women who joined the Union Army and the colored troops and pretended to be young men. And I mean, fighting men, not just drummer boys who, you know, basically black Joan of Arcs. One of my favorite things is Gilberto Freire. He writes in his book about Brazilian history, he talks about how the influence of black people in the kitchen, but he says that nobody cooked better than the homosexual. And he talks about these black gay men in the kitchen in the 1700s and 1800s, and goes into this deep description and talks about how this is one of the greater culinary legacies of Afro-Brazilian culture in these big houses with these black gay cooks. And I read this with my jaw dropped open, because I was just like, between that and the obvious evidence of these male cooks that were on these plantations and also in the cities as free people of color, when everybody was enslaved, it just said to me, from Cuba to Brazil to Haiti to Jamaica to the United States and beyond, there was an entire history of black queer people carving out a space. And I want to make this very clear before we change over. Kitchens were a space of negotiated power a lot of time. They wasn't just like, you know, the enslaved person was kowtowing and bowing and kissing the person's feet. A lot of white people, when they wrote about the politics of the kitchen in slavery and in also in antebellum times, if we're free people of color, they talk about the black person as like a general, as a marshal, as somebody who actually held the power in the space. And I think that's incredible. So this is where I want to stop with this. One of my favorite narratives is Rosalie Steer Calvert, and she was the Belgian born and raised wife of one of the Calverts, a very powerful family that founded Maryland. And she inherited a plantation in what is now Prince George's County outside of Washington, D.C., tobacco plantation. And she writes to her sister and complains about Robert the cook. Now, you and I both know who Robert is, because this is what she says. I would like to sell Robert. So she really wants to do him in and sell him to like Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, someplace like that. But she said, because when I entered the kitchen, and I've actually been in a kitchen space, Michael, she says, he sucks his teeth and turns his head and rolls his eyes as if they were going to fall out of his head. Well, we know who the hell Robert is, don't we? We know that Robert is the big old queen. Robert ain't got no wife. Robert's looking like, what you want?
Robert was giving her a run for her money and taking no lip or attitude.
No lip, nothing from you. But here's the thing she says. She says, but I cannot sell him because his food is so good. You know, we have to ask new questions about power. And remember what Miss Raj says in The Colored Museum. That last line of Miss Raj, the gay character in the Colored Museum by George C. Wolfe, is, "That's power, baby. Snap on that."
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's what we got.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, my God. You know what? In Your Mouth, listeners, when I met Michael for drinks, he took me down a serious road of all sorts of conversations that I did not expect. And it was a beautiful kiki. And I guess today was my turn to do that to him in return in the most beautiful way. And I am absolutely okay with it because I am living for every last moment. But I think we all are going to live for one Michael Twitty and this version of my favorite part and your favorite part of the podcast. Michael, it's a little something we like to call Food News Update.
Food news.
Ooh, honey, you ain't ready.
Girl, spill the tea.
News Update.
Bring it.
Nabisco bakers are on strike, possibly slowing down our supply of Oreos and Ritz.
Oh, so no more crackers. Well, you know what? I think that during the years of 45, we saw a lot of Oreos and a lot of crackers, so I'm cool.
Oh my God. So this is not the first food strike we've seen post and during the pandemic. Last month, workers at the Frito-Lay plant in Topeka, Kansas went on strike for better pay and hours. Not long after, truck drivers at the Pepsi bottling plant in Munster, Indiana also walked off the job, primarily over healthcare costs. And now Nabisco, another staple of grocery shelves, is dealing with its own strike. Thank you to Food and Wine News. So last week, over 200 workers at the Nabisco factory in Portland, Oregon, where popular products like Oreos and Ritz are produced, not to mention like Chips Ahoy and other things, went on strike to keep, basically to keep their jobs. The paper, The Willamette Week, states that the workers at Nabisco's Richmond, Virginia bakery, as well as Colorado Call Center, have now also joined the strike. One major point of contention is reportedly the plan to remove overtime and weekday pay and instead opt for a 48-hour work week.
Mm.
So basically what it comes down to is this parent company is trying to instill like this like new work system, but it means longer hours and no overtime or whatever they call it, pay, as opposed to, and these workers went on strike. They're not fighting for anything more. They're fighting to keep their jobs because what is being offered is the leader of the union is not worth fighting for.
I've literally had it with the way like the people on top don't want for anything, and they're not willing to do the basic work that it takes to help other people have a decent life.
Exactly. One of the workers was reported as saying, like, "I worked 5 weeks in a row, no break. But at the end of the day, I could do that and have this overtime pay and like get paid out for it and compensated, you know?" As opposed to what they're offering now, which is going to put me at longer hours and less money.
So here's the deal. Like, okay, so I think we need to start pushing back because all these forces are related. And we need to make this comment. Y'all want 1950s America, right? What do they mean by that? They mean white men that aren't depressed because the world's falling apart, who can afford to maintain, send two children to college at least, have their wife at home not working, and can afford two vacations a year and Christmas presents, because, you know, we were never Jewish. And like they have that world. Well, okay, so what you're doing is you're asking the present generation of Americans to not want X, Y, and Z because that's quote unquote socialism. But you don't want people in the food industry, in the fields, in the restaurants, in the factories, having a decent life because you want to keep $5 more in your pocket. And that would actually, if it was distributed, would mean that, you know, they could work at your damn plant and do what they need to do. And what gets me, Michael, is that it's a big grift. It's a big joke to say to us, don't you want this traditional way of life that only was good for a small part of the population? But don't you want these benefits of it? But at the same time, let me make it totally impossible to ever have a world where, you know, if you want to go to college, you can. If you want to have a one income household, which, you know, whatever about that, you can. Whatever. They don't want to create that world. And when I hear these people talk about, like, you know, when you're giving this, you know, news flash about folks who just want to, you know, have that overtime so they can afford something decent. They can, you know, pay for that repair.
Yeah.
It's nah.
While still working their asses off.
They're not asking they're not asking to do less. They're just asking for anything that's not normal.
Do you know, Michael, I got in the mail last week another letter from a lawyer, right? From a different class action lawsuit against another catering company here in the city that I've worked for. This is probably maybe the eighth I've been in my 22, 23-year hospitality career. And I posted, and you may have seen it. I was like, how hard is it not to steal tips and wages from the people who already aren't working, who already aren't making that much money and are working to the bone for you?
Oh, Lord. You know, I didn't know that was a thing until I saw that scary episode of, like, we didn't remember that show where Gordon Ramsay went to some, like, crazy lady's place in Arizona and her husband was taking the tips off the table.
Oh, yes. I saw that. That was, like, at the beginning of when he was doing that show. I remember that episode.
And I was like, you did what now? Okay, what? You still have hands?
Yeah. No, ma'am.
Snap fingers?
Listen, well, no matter what is happening right now, I think you and I stand with these Nabisco strike workers, right? Power to the people. We are here for you. Let it be known. Go out there and show your support for these people just trying to keep their jobs, for crying out loud.
They're trying to bring you to your Oreos and your crackers, you know.
And can we get our Chips Ahoy, please? Can we?
Chips Ahoy.
Listen.
I thought I liked you.
Listen, moving right along to there is a beer. There is a beer. We got to move along here.
Uh-oh.
Listen, there is a beer that was brewed to pair perfectly with mayonnaise, Michael Twitty.
Oh, Lord have mercy. Was this from Indiana? Where was Iowa? What's going on?
Yet another gem from Food and Wine News. Thank you. Listen, folks. A mayonnaise brand and a brewery have collaborated to create the ultimate beer for pairing with mayo, which sounds like it'd be great for either elevating your mayonnaise experience or washing the sauce off your tongue. South Carolina-based Duke's Mayonnaise teamed up with Virginia.
Virginia,
that's your home, honey. Virginia's Champion Brewery Company to tackle a simple question. Can we create the perfect beer to pair with Duke's mayonnaise? Specifically, a Duke's slathered BLT. Well, they did exactly that. All right. And this beer, the results are a beer called Family Recipe, named after Duke's origins, a 5.1% ABV Vienna style lager made with Vienna malt and Magnum and Saaz hops for a bit of bitterness.
What?
Y'all can hear Michael just rubbing his temple.
I'm just like, I can't with y'all. I can't. Right. Really? This is the next generation of Southern food innovation. To take Duke's Mayonnaise, a company which I respect, because as you well know, Michael, there are only two acceptable answers. For most people, one, but two is probably a better bet. Southern families will only buy Duke's or Hellman's.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference between Duke's is that Duke's has no sugar, but there's a good reason for that, because once we get our hands on some ish, we're going to add sugar to it anyway. So you might as well start off with no sugar so that when you put the cup of sugar in, it makes total sense. So I'm just, wow. Okay.
Are you a beer person? Do you like beer?
I totally am not. And again, it goes back to that thing where, like, we just weren't allowed. And actually, you know what? It's deeper than that. My mother, blessed memory, and by the way, upon taping, it's her birthday.
Oh.
I wish my mama happy birthday in heaven.
Shout out to you, Mama in heaven. Mama Twitter.
I say, Mama Townsend.
Mama Townsend.
She didn't take daddy's name.
Forgive me.
No worries. But like, my mother did something really cool and innovative when I was little. When I was like 3 or 4, my mother goes, come here, drink this. And it's beer. And I go, oh yeah, I can have beer. I'm cool. It was so nasty to my palate that I never drank beer ever again.
Oh my God.
That's now so one big mistake.
Yes. Delicious. Listen, I know you and I drank all the things that night at the Soho
all
Grand.
The things, but we didn't drink no damn beer.
No, and especially not some beer to pair with your Duke's mayonnaise, right? Listen, shit. I think you and I are here for some Duke's mayonnaise. Shout out to you, Duke's mayonnaise. And I don't know if you know Grossi Pelosi, but he's all August long. It's been Duke's mayonnaise toast and tomatoes, right? I'm having all the cravings for that. But I don't know about this beer. Maybe if they send it to us, I don't know. Maybe, you know what? We'll give it to your husband. And
he don't drink beer either. although I'm down for using beer in a culinary context in terms of bread, in terms of boils, in terms of all that kind of good stuff that we use beer for. So I'm down with that. But the mayonnaise pairing, girl, bye.
Listen. And moving right along to... There is a Monopoly-themed restaurant that just opened in London.
Oh, can I pay in the Monopoly money? Because that'd be cool.
That would be cool, but no. It's the... So, once again, thanks to Food & Wine magazine, you know, there's almost 85 years after the Waddington London's board made its debut, a.k.a. Monopoly, there's now a Monopoly-themed bar and restaurant in the capital city, complete with an adjacent 4D, completely immersive version of the game. According to Big Hospitality, the bright red booths in the bar were inspired by the color of the game's hotels, and the other seating options have been upholstered with reclaimed fabrics from trains on the Piccadilly and Northern Underground lines.
Okay.
Because, it looks really, really cute, you know? The Top Hat's menu focuses on quintessentially British small plates, which include petite versions of pub classics like rump steak with parsnip mash and a mini Yorkshire pudding. Y Valley lamb, and miniature fish and chips.
You know what? Okay, let's talk about this for a second. We need to have a restaurant called Castro, the survival series. And I ain't talking about the dude. I'm talking about the neighborhood. Wow. That's all they got to offer is like pub food? Really?
It's pub food. And it was created, where's the line that says, right, you can ask for a deck of Monopoly deal cards. You can take a chance on an option for like a random cocktail. You know, players will have to compete in an escape room style challenges in order to buy properties on like the life-size game. And it was like it was created in celebration of like coming out of the pandemic as something like fun to make people excited to go out again. So I could be here for that, you know?
You know what? Okay, all this is great and good, but Michael Twitty does not do escape rooms. That is too much like my history. Hell no. I ain't trying to... Look, I ain't trying to be y'all's gay Harriet
Michael
Tubman.
Twitty, get off my podcast.
Don't forget Kyle. Escape room ass.
I usually only do 3 of these, but this was too good to pass by. And last but not least... Michael Twitty. Mariah Carey is launching a line of Irish cream.
God, you know what? I'm going to leave it the hell alone. All I want for Christmas is you.
Oh my God. This is from The Cut. Thank you to The Cut. And whoever wrote this is hysterical. Rather than an always be my Bordeaux or a diamond encrusted bottle of champagne, Carrie has come out with a line of Irish cream liqueurs, a bewildering and unexpected choice. It's dubbed Black Irish, an homage to her Black, Venezuelan, and Irish heritage. And it comes in 3 flavors, original white chocolate and salted caramel.
Okay. That's like a DNA test in a liquor bottle. Bye. Nope. So the last one really got me, the salted As a cinnamon boy myself, you know, I don't qualify for milk chocolate and mocha, but, you know.
Wait, I just really want to know how it relates to her Black, Venezuelan, and Irish heritage.
I want to know what the Venezuelan part is, because I kind of get the other parts.
The original, the white chocolate and salted caramel. I don't. Are they like one for one here?
Because you know, Venezuela don't scream white chocolate to me.
No, none of it.
None of it. Like the island right across that, like that province in Canada. None of it. Nope. No, ma'am. I know geography.
I don't know if we're here for this, but I sure as hell would taste some if the queen herself sent me some.
I would only drink it if she was brought to me in an office chair, held up by several hunks, bearing a tray.
That's it, bearing a tray of that and a side of lactose digestives. And with that, I think that's the best way to end Food News Update.
Michael Munoz, I was totally ready for you to be like, there's a beer pairing with the Chips Ahoy, and I was going to just hang up. It's done.
They've done like Fruity Pebbles beer.
Really?
Yes. They've done for Pride, or some brewing company did like an edible glitter beer.
No, they poisoned y'all.
They poisoned y'all. You know, no one should be eating that much edible glitter. You know?
unless you're like Simply Nail Logical, you have no excuse.
No. Even though my Snapchat name is Sparkly Poops.
Oh my God. Okay, wait, hold on. Look, excuse me. We have to go back to something. I'm sorry. Rewind.
Take me wherever you want.
What's up with the Irish cream to honor her little children with Nick Cannon?
Oh, yeah. Where is that? Oh my God, that Nick Cannon. Can we talk about it for a minute?
Yeah, let's do that.
You know what? That man needs to come out of the closet and then maybe slide up into my DMs.
Oh,
all right.
Call me by your name. That's what I need to send. That's why I need to send little Montero on a mission. I need Montero to tell us everybody out there
to dig them all out.
Dig them all out. Take them all out.
Dig
baby.
Them all out, figuratively and literally. Okay.
Do it.
Okay.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Oh my God, this has been so incredible. You know what we haven't talked about and we need to touch on a second for those of the listeners out there who don't know you, who are probably completely obsessed right now. How did you end up here? Like, what made you wake up one day? You rolled out of bed one day and you were like, you know what? I am going to trace my culinary roots back to Africa, all the while teaching Judaism and dyeing my own tights.
Right.
And y'all just going to be here for it and it's going to work. Like, take me through that beginning point and how you got here.
So this has always been me. It's always been me to the point where I remember when my grandmother passed away and I was away from school for the longest time. It was like 9 days. It was a big event in my family. It was an end of an era. And I remember the rumor at middle school was that Michael Twitty finally went to Africa. And I just thought, you know, the fact that there are people who I know who grew up with me who can say, yeah, he was always that person. It's really powerful for me because it means I have a destiny. You know, some people, they don't know their destiny until it's over. And they look back with great regret saying, I don't know why I was even here. And then there's people like me for whom, since I was very, very little, my grandmother's sister, my great aunt used to say, used to call me the Obi child. Obi is, by the way, for those who know, Obeya is a form of Vodun, a form of African traditional religion and magic in the Caribbean. And so she used to call me the Obi child, right? And so all these little hints the universe drops for you. I have one of my exes, he said one time, you know, boys have really boring clothing. And I agree with him because there's not a lot of options for like articulating. I mean, they give you watches and they give you maybe on a good day, a bracelet or a necklace. And you can't do too much of that in Western clothing to sort of adorn yourself and make little curatorial choices. And so I've, you know, always been like, an admirer of Diane Carroll. And I was like, Diane Carroll had the best legs. And I aspire to that. And so for me, like when my mom, honestly, I'll be very blunt with you. Well, after my mother passed away, I had license to sort of be a different person. Because, you know, coming out when I was younger was tough because I feel like in a lot of ways, you know, you grow up, especially in black and brown culture, everything you do reflects on your parents. You know, if they're still in your life, it's like everything. So I held back in a lot of parts of who I was. And then when I knew that I was fully in control of my sort of like fears of being judged or fears of my mother feeling any sort of embarrassment or shame about who I was, there was certainly a lot of that. I was like, okay, I'm inching towards 40. I think I was 37, 38 years old when I was just like, this has always been my thing. Let me just do my thing with shorts. So now I wear shorts all year round. I buy a big old lot of white sheer tights, and people try to make me wear like the non-slutty tights, and I'm like, no, sweetie, I need to show this leg off. And so I refuse to wear the legging type because it's not cute to me. I mean, I want to test the metal.
You're not heading over to the Duane Reade and getting a plastic egg of legs?
No, ma'am. No, ma'am. I mean, I am literally, I don't know if you saw this or not, but on my Instagram, like, somebody was like, you should let SheerTex know because the company does like the really expensive unbreakable tights. And so I was like, oh, hell yeah. So they sent me this big ass box. And I had for a little while, my Instagram followers had like a sales code. I was a tights influencer for a minute. And it's funny because, you know, I'm this bearish big black man and I love to, you know, I feel like I have a limited shelf life on like my libidinous marketability, mm-hmm. which is a very fancy SAT way of saying, you know, I can only be that hoe for so long.
Yeah.
And also just like denying, even though I came out at a very young age in a very public way, that had so many costs in my life, which I won't go into, that I shrank back. And it was also because we were not given the same visibility. I mean, now it seems like people want more visibility from guys like us. But back then, it was still all about the white boys and what they could do and how they could do it. I mean, like, it's funny because I was even reading like a thing popped up on Instagram like, oh, look, men are wearing tights and stockings and hose these days. And I'm just like, and they were all white and they were all skinny. I'm like, bitch. These black and brown queens like me been out here from big always. Boys with hair on their face to the other queens, the queens that ran with the crown on their face,
yeah.
To the twinks in the middle, and we've been doing this. We had purses before, we had purses and fans before Harry Styles.
Yeah, amen.
But you know, until one of them does it, and that's why I think I hammer so hard on just do you and be you and be it loudly, so they can't deny that we had that role. For me, it's I'm not trying to hurt anybody's feelings. I'm not trying to challenge them beyond where they're comfortable, but I am trying to drag them kicking and screaming into a world where everything that you are can be possible.
Amen. Amen. And this is yet another crossroads where we meet in the sense of I've been painting my nails for a very long time.
Hello.
Right? But now all of a sudden it's popular, right? Right? Because Nick Jonas or Justin Bieber or somebody's painting their nails black or something. And I was like, we've been here. We've been doing this. Or this trend of these queens wearing those unitards. There's like sexy unitards. Everybody's in the unitard. And I was like, oh, y'all paying $80, upwards of $80 or whatnot for this when I used to go down to the Rainbow to get mine?
Hello. Come on now. Come on now. But, you know, it's also, I think it's about the fact that we have had to do that hard work. It takes bravery. I mean, people always ask me, well, do people say anything? I say, okay, I can probably count on about 5 times when somebody says something really unfortunate or unkind to me in public. But for the most part, the best feeling, Michael, is when you're in an airport and you see some, like, woofy somebody, and he ain't saying, he looking. He looking hard. I done had him stare back and look and keep looking. I said, I know exactly what the hell you thinking, and it's not let me go beat him up.
Yeah. Mm. Well, maybe it's let me go beat him up, but in a different way.
They ain't going to beat this up. They ain't going to beat this up, baby. They might get a beating from me, but they ain't going to get no, ma'am. No, ma'am. But it's fun. And then the people at the airport I really love to get into if they're pissy with me are the security dudes, right? Because sometimes they try to get cute. You know, you got to take your shoes off. They got to be like, well, we saw a drop of sweat. Well, you know, Negroes and Puerto Ricans, you putting some shea butter on the ashy self. So the security thing picks up the little lotion and the bumps of sweat. I'm cool. Cause guess what? It's your hands that got to be all over this.
Mm-hmm.
And one time I had this beautiful Italian American young dude from Pittsburgh. He was not looking forward to this, but I sure as hell was. I was thanking God for that machine. Yes, I was, honey. I was like, wow, my younger days have returned.
Hello.
Hello. But, you know, but another part of it is that apart from that, I'm really glad that I have a lot of people through social media who have been like men, straight, gay, in between, bi, this, that, you know, pansexual, who are like, oh, because you do that and you don't have any shame about it, I have no problem wearing the clothes that I want to wear out. I feel brave about it because you're brave about it. You're inspirational to me. Or like people, you know, like other like people of size, like, you know, feeling like they can wear and do what they want to do and feel beautiful in themselves and let people know I still have a sex life. I'm just attractive to other people as you are attracted to other people. And I have the right to adorn and beautify myself and take pride in who I am.
Amen.
That to me is the best shit. It's the best.
There's a certain comfortability and grounding in yourself, you know, and when that happens, it's almost like you're untouchable.
Right. It almost. And then you have people remind you, you know, sometimes people will say stuff and I can get a little unnerving. Like the first time I was aware that they had to hire security for an event that I did. First of all, having security, having police is really. Ugh, that's another kind of conversation. I remember I got a big laugh out of when I went to University in Michigan, and this big event, like hundreds of people, and I was like, "You actually had to hire security?" And I said, "Can I see like the letters, the emails that you got that made you do this?" He's like, "Are you sure?" And I said, "Yes." And one of them said, Michael Twitty needs to die because he's a sexual deviant. And all I just busted out laughing. And all I could think was, you think more highly of my life.
Yeah.
You make me far more interesting. Well, I kind of am, but not as deeply as they wanted me to be.
Yeah. You know, like the picture they painted, like this triptych of like, you know, earthly sinful delights that you're just there. You know,
like, I want to be that bitch. I want to be that bitch.
Little do
Sign
they know.
Sign me up.
You know who is that bitch? I'm that bitch.
Yes.
Oh
yes.
My God. That may be the title of this episode. I'm that bitch. Michael Twitty, this has been so special, and I guess it was just written in the stars, and that it needs to be that. And I love that the pup is like, amen,
to that in the background.
The blind dog is like, amen.
Yes. Oh, listen, at the beginning of the podcast, we heard what's up next for you. You have a couple books coming out, a couple things, a couple projects in the work that I know about that I don't know if we can talk about, but, you know, there's big things happening for Michael Twitting. What, final question before we close out here. You know, you put out such specific information, right? That's fantastic and that's rich. What is your hope for people to do with that information?
I really want them to use it as their source code to build their own architecture of where they need, where things need to go next. That's why I get so frustrated with people not going to that next level. Like people, for example, to be very specific with the cooking gene, the questions I was asked about what I was experiencing and bringing that book to life and everything were very inane. It was like, well, what surprised you? And I'm just like, no, this is about confirmation. Because one of the things that colonialization and slavery did was it robbed us. And indigenous genocide, it robbed us of, you know, millions of invisible pages of our stories and our history. And so for me, the whole work and the whole act was about, and my whole career is about going back and retrieving what we call in Akan philosophy from Ghana, which is one of my major parts of my DNA and heritage, Sankofa, which means to go back to your past and fetch it. So you can go forward into the future with the knowledge and wisdom of your ancestors. And you know, can be have your eyes open and be aware, right? And I just want people to take that, those queer tidbits, those Black tidbits, those Jewish tidbits, those global tidbits, all those pieces, and use them to do something new. To do something new. Do something different. To own parts of themselves they have previously denied access to. To take back that power. And they do it unapologetically and without having need to prove anything to anyone. I'm trying to do the work so that you don't have to prove a damn thing. All you have to do is be, knowing that the receipts are there. Knowing that you have the blueprint, you have the source code. And I guess you know, my name was associated for a little bit in the mouths of white folks with all due respect, white folks, with, you know, beating back appropriation, which, you know, I would be fighting appropriation too if that's how I made my money. Let's be real. You know, the pushback about appropriation wasn't about being rational. It was about, you know, trying to maintain power by theft. It's still going on. I mean, there's passive aggressive appropriation, like when people be trying to charge $25 for a chopped cheese. You know, at a fancy restaurant, knowing where it came from. But for me, I don't want the kids out here to prove a damn thing. I don't want these elders to prove a damn thing. I want them just to be able to move forward with confidence. One of the greatest ways to heal that sort of negative energy, because we could be, we're already here. We're already multicultural, right? We're already, all of us of every background is at the intersection of global cultures constantly crashing into each other. And sometimes it's harmonious, sometimes it's problematic, but it's still going to happen. And what we have to realize is if we are living in a multicultural democracy, we have a responsibility to know each other's cultures, to know each other's boundaries and opportunities, and to respect one another. And for those of us who are marginalized, oppressed, who have rich cultures that everybody keeps on trying to bite off of but don't give no respect to, the greatest armor that you have is knowledge. The greatest armor that you have is being able to say you have those receipts in that source code. Because you know what? It's not about aping. It's not about copying. It's not about having the recipe. It's not about taking that food and that food culture and doing what you want with it. It's about me telling you, until you have walked in these shoes, until this blood from these heroes and heroines runs through your veins, until you are willing to sacrifice and give up some of your power, to sit here with me, not as a damn ally, but as an accomplice, we ain't got nothing to talk about. So that's what I want people to do with these lessons and these things that I dig up, knowing that I don't have all the answers and never will. I am not the all-knowing, all-wise. I am just as much a traveler and a learner like you are, and someone who, you know, knows the value of experience and experiences. And that's where I want people to do that for themselves. I want people to be able to take up that mantle on their own and do their own work and find their own power.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm feeling the same way. Like life's calling right now has me as a vessel, you know?
Yes. Yes.
I'm a vessel, right? Here's it. Here's this. Here are the facts. Here are these people. Here's what's happening. And you need to know. Right.
Right. Right. And also, here's one thing I have to say. We are both doing something really poetic and really beautiful and really powerful. And that's simply saying, I am here. Not I was here, not I will be there. I am here. You know, I'm present. I'm real. You know, you are a legend of your own making, you know, because you're saying, no, I'm Latin. I am in this space. I am a gay man. We exist. And there's tons of people like me. And there's tons of TOs out there who have this very similar story to what I have to tell you. And guess what? We're the culture makers. We're the creators in all these different kinds of creative arts and forms. And if you don't speak up and you don't draw attention to that and you don't tell those stories and tell your own story, that's another thing I tell people. Don't ever forget or fail to tell your own story. Start now. Start now. Don't wait. It's not like stupid movies where you like sit back one day and you reflect, because you might not even remember everything then.
Yeah. It's always funny, and I would be surprised if you haven't had this experience. And we do have to close out. I can't keep you here forever, even though I do want to keep you here forever. It's funny when I walk into a space, especially a culinary space, and me being me, you know, I am loud. I present myself in a very specific way, authentically me, you know, living my best life, acting a fool, sometimes doing whatnot. But like, even most recently, as of like yesterday, a chef came up and he was like, wait a minute, I heard you do this one thing. And I was like, yeah, I do this thing and it's great. And he was like, what do you mean? I don't understand. Heteronormative, Latino, albeit, right? Hetero chef. And he goes, what do you mean? I don't get it. And I was like, well, let me tell you, right? And it was like this. Cliff notes, bullet points, here. And he looked at me and he was like, it's that realization of like, oh, this person, I like, you know, I saw one thing, but obviously this person knows his shit, right? In this specific vein. And I was just like, I wasn't like putting him in his place. We were obviously having like dialogue and a good discussion, but like in this sense of like, oh, I was prejudged as this one thing. And then here I came in with all this knowledge, right? Because now you've opened a door. And I was like, so like, you want in? I said to him, yeah, I was like, you want in? Because my door is open to you. Like, how can I help? Because although I'm paving a very specific path, there's room, but you need to know.
You're universal too.
Yeah.
I'm universal too. We are just as much a part of the stream as everybody else.
Yeah.
And can accommodate everybody's story.
Yeah. Like, come on in. You need, what were you looking for? Oh, well.
Bring it.
Let's go. I'm here for the party. So like, you ready? You ready to come on? Let's go. If not, get off the dance floor, please. You know what I mean?
Confessions of a damn dance floor. That's how we're going to end this.
That's it. Oh, my God, Michael. Thank you so, so much. My heart and my spirit are filled. I can't thank you enough for giving me of your time today.
No worries.
This is special. I can't wait till we meet in person. I'm going to have to come down and visit you next time.
Yes, honey. In my little farm in Virginia.
Listen, I'm not. You put me to work. I got some overall, like some pink overall poom pooms.
I saw. I'm jealous.
Okay. So I got those. Oh my God. Once again, big shout out to Michael Twitty. Michael Twitty, oh my God, give the audience, all the listeners, all the handles, all the websites, all the things.
Absolutely. On Twitter, I am at Kosher Soul. K KOSHERSOUL. On Instagram, I am The Cooking Gene, just like the book, The Cooking Gene. On Facebook, I'm Michael W. Twitty. And of course, our blog is afroculinaria.com. It's more like my website now than a blog. We'll get back into that later. But definitely find me there. And please, please support The Cooking Gene through Amistad, through HarperCollins. Please buy the book. We authors like to tell people that, you know, buy it retail. Buy it from an independent bookseller if you can. If not, go to the next level. You know, that helps us do the work. I take chefs to West Africa. I did it last year. Hopefully we'll do it again in 2022. But that helps me pay other chefs way to go to the continent to get that experience. So please support that work. Thank you. Thank you, Michael.
Of course. Of course. I am your biggest stan, sister. In sister through the ancestors, and then some. And you know what? Out there, obviously, if you haven't fallen in love with Michael by this time, I don't know how you could not. Go out and buy one, and then, you know what? Buy one to give, too. Like, I do that all the time, you know? Like, I bought Chef Kwame Onwuachi's book. I actually bought two. I bought one for myself and one to give, you know? And so that's how that rolls. And I mean, this has been a fabulous, well, now it's got to be a two-part episode because we did the thing.
We did that. Yes.
And it felt like nothing. Yeah, any of us listeners, I have nothing more to say except for big shout out to Michael Twitty. Go show him all the love. And as always, thank you for listening to In Yo Mouth.